A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Ram, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on January 5, 1997, entitled, Dare to Follow the Light. The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 60, verses 1 through 7 and 19 through 22, Matthew 2, verses 1 through 12 and 16 through 18, and Ephesians 3, verses 1 through 21. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Epiphany, the manifestation of Christ, the light of which the prophet in Israel spoke, that light of God, which was Israel's treasure, in order that they might be a beacon to the nations. Now Matthew sees coming to manifestation in Jesus. There, in the face of Jesus, we see into the heart of God. And Paul, with his experience, being knocked off his horse by that light from heaven, realizes that the mystery of God, hid for the ages, now manifest, is that there is grace for the whole world. That really is the Epiphany story. And as we read it in Matthew's Gospel, we recognize that not only there, but in the prophet and in Paul's understanding, the light has come. The light has come. The light has dawned upon you. There is something final about that. It's not a lack of knowledge. The light has dawned upon us. And we recognize immediately in that story of Jesus, as Matthew tells it, that when the light comes, the darkness is threatened. And all hell breaks loose. This is the story of Herod, threatened by the announcement of this newborn king who passes a decree that the innocents should be slaughtered in order to wipe out any pretender to the throne. Matthew is telling us immediately, and this joyous announcement of the birth of Jesus, that the world will not take kindly to the light. And that has been the story down through 2,000 years, has it not? Well, it has been the story forever. The gospel, the Christian gospel, is the announcement of the light of God. It is seen in continuity with that light that dawned on Israel. And now for 2,000 years, the gospel has been proclaimed. And the light of God has shined throughout the whole world. But this morning, I want to suggest to you that it is not a question of whether or not the light has dawned. The question always before the church, and the question before us this morning, is whether or not we will dare to follow the light. I want to suggest to you that Paul was a courageous person who made a radical break with that heavy, sturdy tradition in which he had been nurtured. When confronted by the light, he recognized the call of God to take the light to the nations. Now, we take that for granted. We celebrate Epiphany as the dawning of the light that had shined on Israel, which was now being manifest to the whole world, symbolized by the coming of the Magi. So it's ho-hum. We take it for granted. But you couldn't have taken it for granted if you had lived at the time of the event itself. For Paul to realize, to sense a calling of God to take the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ to the Gentiles involved Paul going contrary to all of that that had been nurtured in him. Paul had to be a person of daring to say, that the Gentiles can be reconciled to God by God's grace without first becoming Jews. Paul was a radical reformer, and there was great tension in that early church, and it was a long time before the question was settled as to whether or not there would be a separate Jesus Christian movement or whether Paul could prevail within the Jewish community itself to see in Jesus this light of God. But Paul had the courage to act on his conviction, and that at great cost. But as he writes in this third chapter to the Ephesians, this secret, he says, long hid with God, but now made manifest, is precisely that, that the grace of God is for the Gentiles, so that Jew and Gentile will make one new humanity. In another place in this letter, he speaks about that wall being torn down, that wall of separation. Paul had cut his eye teeth on the idea of Jewish separation, that separation over against all others. But Paul says, no more wall, no more partition, no more separation. Now, this gospel, what God has said in Jesus Christ, is that God is moved to embrace all. Well, that took courage, and Paul paid for it dearly, as many of his writings will indicate. And I want to suggest to you my Epiphany message, 1997, is this. It's a question. Do we have the courage to follow the light? Ours is not a lack of knowledge. I think the prophets and apostles and preachers for ages have recognized that the light has dawned. But there has been a failure of nerve to live out the implications of the light. It seems to me that here we are 2,000 years down from the event of the gift of that one in whose face we've seen the light of the glory of God. What are the issues before us? In the light of that light, what is God calling us to do and to be in our day in order to follow the light? It's one thing to dance in the light. It's another thing to behave and to act in light of the light. And I want to suggest to you, because of the nature of our situation, that what the stand we have taken as a congregation is the only responsible and reasonable way in which the Church of Jesus Christ can respond to the light and follow the light. Bill Moyers has been in the news a lot lately. His Genesis series is very, very popular. And he's done a lot of other things. But I knew he was a Southern Baptist minister, but I was surprised that the Southern Baptists invited him to address it to the Texas Conference. Because the Southern Baptist Convention has been taken over in the last decade or decade and a half by very conservative fundamentalist forces. But Moyers addressed the Texas Southern Baptist Convention, and he said to them, in a little clip I found in the newspaper, that there is a whole new religious reality out there, and you've got to change from that militant anger over the fact that the universe is not closed and life is not static. Well, it sounds like he really gave them both barrels, and he probably won't be invited back. But what he said is true, and we all know it. There's a whole new religious reality out there, And most of the church wants to put its head in the sand as though it doesn't exist. Isaiah thought the end was imminent and the light was dawning. It was 500 years, and Matthew thought the light had dawned and the end was imminent. And now it's 2,000 years. Do you suppose that God in heaven is saying, "What in heaven's name are you people doing? Why don't you keep following the light? Why don't you keep working out the implications of the light?" Is it not for anybody with any sensitivity to our present global situation, is it not evident to anybody that that world evangelization that has been the impulse of the church all these years is an impulse that has hit a dead end? We do not see the evangelization of the world according to the gospel of Christ. We see the resurgence of the great world religions, and we live in a global community that must increasingly become a community of communities in which, as we are able to communicate now, in the world that has become a neighborhood, we are learning the insights and the sensitivities and the light that has dawned on others. Are we not being challenged to go into the arena and share our insight and our light that has been God's gift through Jesus Christ with others who share their gifts as well? It seems to me that on the edge of the third millennium, somebody ought to be scratching their head like Paul did and say, Paul was absolutely amazed that there was a whole new stage of God's movement, drama, opening up. And Paul had the courage to go through that door. It is time for someone to recognize that the mystery is even deeper, grander, and brighter than even Paul understood, that God has a grander scheme and that we have a treasure in Jesus Christ to bring to the table in a world that sits down and discusses the respective riches of the traditions, bringing together the light that God has given. It's one thing to say the light has dawned. It's another thing to have the courage to live out its implication. And it does take courage. And that courage is exercised only at considerable cost. And that's the reason. For so long, the world isn't transformed. It's not a lack of light. It's a lack of courage. I got a letter the other day from an old friend, really a dear, dear letter, worried about me. He says, after a bit, what if you've been wrong? What if the faith you once held but hold no, but have moved more and more away from is true? Well, he's a friend. He's saying to me, what if you're wrong? Well, he says, I hear you say I'm willing to take that chance. And then he goes on to say, well, I should make him my press agent. He says so many wonderful things, I think I'll have it printed in the Tribune. But finally, he says, so I invite you to take a fresh look, to ask again for God's light. I say, fine. Don't think I don't. And I know that there's all kinds of insight out there. There's all kinds of a sense down deep in the core of all kinds of people, that the kind of things I said publicly are what any reasonable analysis would issue in. But it's costly, and it takes courage to say it. That word has appeared in letter after letter after letter from around the world. Thank you for your courage. Do we have the courage to follow the light? How long will we bask in the light that has dawned without doing something about it? Because without the courage to act on the light, the world will not be transformed. The issue that got us into controversy a year ago was the issue of sexual orientation and my recognition, because of the growing light, knowledge, and experience, that sexual orientation is not a moral issue. And I have in my hands a book which is brilliant. It's called Virtually Normal, written by Andrew Sullivan, who is the editor of the New Republic. It is splendidly written and beautifully argued. And Andrew Sullivan, dealing with the whole matter of sexual orientation, himself being a gay man, speaks about various groups lined up on this issue. The prohibitionists, the liberationists, the conservatives, the liberals. And he comes to the liberals, and one would think that he, being a gay person, would affirm the liberal attempt to create space for the gay lesbian community. And he is appreciative of the legislations that seek to rule out discrimination and that kind of thing, but he says, finally, the liberals who believe in freedom are denying their own most fundamental principles, because this issue is not something that can finally be legislated and it cannot be fixed by law. And then, speaking for himself, but I think speaking out of a profound experience and a brilliant insight, says that the key to the healing and liberation of any person of homosexual orientation lies within themselves. And he points to the civil rights movement of the 60s. And he says, perhaps the most enduring legacy of the civil rights movement was not its panoply of complicated and cumbersome laws, but the memory of the simple courage of those who stood up in the face of considerable danger for their dignity and equality. What one remembers, what will never be erased from human consciousness, was the gleam of integrity in the eyes of those who took it upon themselves to change their world, expecting no protection and no applause for doing so. It is courage that gets noticed, and courage that changes the world. The pain of the homosexual experience requires that kind of catharsis to be healed. Nothing else can replace it. And that's why I think that what has happened this past week in this area with the death of Jerry Crane is an example of that kind of courage. The teacher in Byron Center, who declared himself and who he was and his faithful covenant relationship with another, who, to be sure, was hounded out of his teaching job and who had to endure 2 and 3 and 4 times as much press as I have, but who nevertheless, as a dignified human being, as a man of class and culture, had the gleam in his eye because he was who he was. And he stood there, exposed in his full humanity. And I'll tell you, there are all kinds of us crouching in the bushes, failing to be, and I'm not talking now about sexual orientation, I'm talking about the things, the core values by which we live. There are all kinds of us who believe things deep down that we've never had enough courage to stand up and speak for. And there's only one thing that really liberates the human soul. There's only one thing that brings us into the fullness of the human experience. It is when we are true to the light as it has dawned upon us. And when the light has dawned upon us and we are true to it, we may find ourselves in Rhema weeping for our children, not able to be comforted. But we will have been true. And when we will have been true, that will be enough.